November 14, 2021, it's the Watt Pedro Show. Happy Sunday, people. Walk for Pedro show up, a remote broadcast from Denver, Colorado. We started with I See Your Face Before Me from John Coltrane, and then International Anthems for Irrational Numbers with The Clocks That Double as Time Machines. That's a beautiful title, beautiful prize name, everything. I love it. And a big respect to Stevie Bono for making this connect. I got Brother Reed Hoffman, Philadelphia. Welcome aboard, Reed.
How's it going?
Bitchin' to have you on. Curious about your journey through music. Please bring your earliest musical recollection.
Well, it's hard to pick one. You know, if you're...
Well, remember, it's a Watt for Pedro show, so there's no wrong answers and there's no hard questions.
Well, I had a stack of 45s that, like, I think one of my mom's brothers had handed down to us or something from the 60s. And, you know, when I was old enough to listen to my Gingerbread Man record or whatever, I'd be listening to Motown and the Beatles and all kinds of bubblegum music and stuff in my room and banging on a snare drum that another family member gave us. So I kind of remember that. I'd kind of throw stuff around my room to rock and roll. I don't know.
Okay, this pad you grew up in, did he have musical instruments besides shit to throw around?
My dad, he played folk music and, you know, just like in his spare time tinkering around, and he had a mountain dulcimer and a penny whistle. So, you know, from a very early age, I heard him play a lot, and I went to a lot of concerts of music like that, like old time bluegrass and Irish music, stuff like that.
I'm curious, did you ever jump on that dulcimer or that penny whistle?
I did. Yeah, I played penny whistle for years, and I still have that dulcimer.
When was your first penny whistle experience of playing, operating, expressing?
I mean, when I was a kid, I would just play around on all the stuff that he had, you know. And then my grandpa got us a piano from a school, I think, for free, you know, just like an old upright piano. And yeah. I took piano lessons for years.
So, well, tell me about that experience, because I've had guests on the show. It almost chased them away from music.
I had a really mean teacher.
Named
Mrs. Shrewsbury, which almost sounds like a mean teacher in
perfect
kids movie or something. But she would, you know, just like very disciplinarian and like not, I don't know. I didn't like playing necessarily, but my parents made me practice, and I went there every week for, I don't know, 5 years or something.
You know, okay.
And then I got another teacher when I was like, I don't know, 12 years old, who, you know, I was like kind of learning disabled. So I just reading music never happened for me. And we got this other teacher who was like, here's how you figure out a melody. Here's how you figure out what the chords to the song you want to play are, you know, and she taught me how to figure music out.
More practical.
And she was a really wonderful teacher, and she had me playing like Bach and, you know, some Mozart pieces and some ragtime and, you know.
That's funny because Mr. Bach played an organ, right?
Yeah.
The piano hadn't been invented yet. What was her name?
You know, I just don't remember. I wish I did.
You remember the other lady.
I remember the mean lady with the funny name.
Let me ask you this. At school, were you in the marching band or the choir, shit like that?
I played saxophone in the band.
Oh, wow.
In fifth grade, but I didn't stick to it. And we didn't actually march. It was like, you know, prepping you to march when you get to middle school kind of thing. And it wasn't really my scene. Jingle bells.
Yeah, right. So, you know,
I wanted
tenor, Barry, what was it?
It was tenor. I wanted to be like all the fun saxophone solos in every song in the 80s, you know?
Okay. Well, I think a lot of that, when I think of the 70s, I'm thinking of, God, who's that guy? David Sanborn and Tom Scott, right? The alto players, and they were on a lot of television theme songs, like Beretta. So let me ask you, first record you bought with your own money?
Well, me and my brother had been taken to the mall to a record store with like our Christmas money or something. And we were in competition to find this record by the band Nucleus, which I think is called Future Shock or something like that. It's like a kind of novelty breakdance record with funny alien voices on it. Remember that song Jam On It? So we were trying to find that, and he's older, so he found it, and I bought Twisted Sister Stay Hungry.
Yeah, of course.
Which I liked the anti-authoritarian message of the band. So I was pretty into that.
Oh, so you're a lyric man.
Yeah, I you know, I was always just kind of like, I grew up listening to the Beatles a lot, and, you know, finding another Beatles record at different stages of my youth was, it was always just such a revelation, and especially the lyrics, you know, and I was always really into stories, you know, songs that tell stories.
You know, everybody liked the Beatles, so well, I had to hate them as a kid because I was an asshole, but I did like one of them, and it was because of the words. It was called Glass Onion.
That's a good one.
And it's them kind of singing about themselves.
Yeah.
So Steve Shelley asked me to do a proj with him. And I said, well, what if we took those words and put it to the music of Tomorrow Never Knows? And we called it the Lucky Sperms. And for the other side, we did our version of Daniel Johnson's Walking the Cow.
Sounds like a pretty trippy record.
Well, that's what projects are for, right? Okay, let me ask you, not after school, like graduating, but in the afternoon, the bedroom band, the garage band, basement band, did you do that?
I was kind of always trying to do something, and, you know, like, you know, my preteen years, I grew up on a farm, so it was just a very, like, being alone pretty often thing. And
sure,
it's always some to do just to get anywhere and see any of my friends. So I'd just be playing the same minor key riffs on the piano, you know, like pieces of Bach and you know, like I knew some Russian folk songs, just random stuff. And then when I was like 14, my brother was starting a hardcore band, and I tried out in that, and that wasn't really happening. And then I met some kids when I got to high school who were, they were really big Velvet Underground fans, and I was a really big Sonic Youth fan. So we kind of like, we started a band, and it was mostly my compositions and my lyrics, and, it was pretty cool.
Can I ask you, when you were in that man alone or young man alone mode, did you get into tape recording?
Yeah, I used to just like make tapes with the, you know, the little handheld tape recorder on the soundboard of the piano, and just get like weird distorted things. And I used to tape, you know, creaky doors and make rhythm tracks out of junk in the house, and with two tape recorders, you know, that kind of thing.
Oh, so you're using the tape recorder kind of as a accompanist.
You use it like to multi-track, you know?
Right.
Yeah. I think
sound.
Everybody tries that out a little bit, you know?
Not everybody. That's why I asked, because Watt didn't do it for a long time. Well, you know, I'm a teenager in the 70s. But Les Paul invented the shit in the 50s.
Yeah. Well, it's pretty marvelous.
Yeah. I got to talk to him once, and he told me all about it. It was incredible. Incredible man. He told me all. In fact, he talked to me for like 2 hours, and I just came to get a bass sign.
That sounds
like put his donut on a whammy bar of his guitar, and the other two guys in the band looked at me like, you motherfucker. Now, it was a Les Paul signature bass, so, you know, he was playing near Pedro, and but incredible cat, and I didn't mean to make those other two guys mad. I really did. He was just generous with his time. So did this band ever do gigs?
Our drummer was like, he was a real character. He was one of the best drummers I've ever played with. He had like taken lessons from, you know, Sim Kane.
Sure.
This guy was from that, you know, a small town near where Sim Kane was from, and he had taken drum lessons from him, and he was like really phenomenal. And, but he was a really wild character. So he was like, we need to play a show, and we'd been playing together for 3 months, maybe four. I was 14, you know, and so he told us he had this show booked at this place called the Princeton Arts Council, which Princeton, New Jersey is real near where I grew up. And, and so, you know, he had the names of a couple bands on the flyer that I'd never heard of. And like, I was like, okay, let's do it. And so, so we show up with all our stuff, and it turns out he hasn't actually talked to the person that you book things at the space with. So we're just there with all our stuff. And, you know, I had like my parents drop me off with like my amp and all my stuff. It's just there on the sidewalk. And like,
I'm sorry.
we don't know if we have a gig. And then, but then it turned out there was an open mic the same night, like in an hour or something. And yeah. So we talked to the guy who was set the open mic up, and we were like, can we play like before the thing happens? And just like our friends will show up and, you know, it won't be a big deal. And he, and my friend had told him we were a blues band, which I,
of course.
So we played and, you know,
would you do Sister Ray or something?
No, I mean, it was a bunch of my own weird songs.
It was
songs,
your own songs, right?
But he was singing, you know, the drummer was singing, it's funny because I got to know someone a little bit in Philly who I knew like all the way back then, about 15 years ago or something. And, we were talking about, you know, things that we were doing then when we were teenagers. And he was like, oh, you were in that, you know, terrible band with the amazing drummer. And I was like, yeah,
but you should have told him those were my songs. He was,
well, they were not especially great songs, but you know.
Yeah, what were you writing about at 14 years old?
I think I just like to put words together in the weird imagery, and I don't think I had any, I hadn't really experienced that many things in life, so I didn't know too many things, so I was just writing, you know, I was just writing things that I thought sounded cool together, like I'd listen to, you know, The Birthday Party or whatever.
Ah, great.
Whatever I was into at the time, and I would just kind of reflect on the way that people wrote songs, you know. I was really into
stuff.
What
was that? Like, they had that one tune, The Friend Catcher.
Yep, that's a good one.
It's got the most trebly, maybe more than D. Boone, that guitar. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I'd say.
What was his name?
I'd say D. Boone got a run for his money with trebly guitar. With,
yeah, what was his name?
Roland S. Howard.
Roland. We lost him, right? He was great. I got to see them once at the Roxy up in West Hollywood.
Oh, lucky you.
And they opened up with a Stooges tune.
Mm.
Yeah, Loose. Yeah, and Tracy Pugh on the bass, oh my God. They were just a four-piece by then.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Up in the drum, yeah. I can't imagine how awesome that would be. But
It was. Because a lot of that stuff you only knew by records, so if you got to see a gig, wow.
Yeah.
Look, I want to play some of this music, because you didn't send me any of this music. So I want to play, this is Read Books. Okay.
Come apart and we pray Take me Let me on, take me on. Your love will be the one and only to desire.
La, 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 la,
Systematic war. can cling to love and life, raging all but on a guess, all except for the gut feeling that these patterns are intense.
Pedro Show, that chunk of music started off with Read Books, which is, I guess, a little pun rock, because Read's name is also the verb for taking words into your eyeballs. Okay, then we had Cedric Noel with Bass Song, brand new. Crane, brand new. The Orphan Train. Neil Turpin, this is a drummer man who did a one-man album where he plays everything in Leeds, England. And In the Right Light, that Agnes Steck out of, he just moved. Fuck. I can't remember, but he was in Austin, but still in Texas. And the last song of Elvis, B-N-O-L, Desire, Petra Hayden, Red, but not the King Crimson Red, her own one. Lagoon Monster Rubber Mask, Volume 3, Part B1. At Baltimore with Bronze Age. It's either UFO or UFO. I don't know how to do that. The Oasis of Unusual Acromegaly Think Pastes from James Twig Harper and Rubber O Cement. Then SLW CC Watt with Stay the Fuck Away From Me. It's a collab I got with Sam Locke Ward out of Iowa City. And then finally, the Nothing Factory, with Ballad of a Nothing Factory Town. Don't confuse that with a Thin Man, people. Give me some milk or go home. That tune's got some good words, Mr. Dylan. In fact, where I'm playing is a couple blocks from where he opened up for the Smothers Brothers when he was 20 years old. Yeah, can you believe that shit? I mean, it's trippy about the physical location sometimes. Continue with your story, please. Like high school.
Well, I had that one disastrous show, and
yeah.
I played in Jazz Workshop in high school for.
Oh, wow.
That was fun, but I was pretty bad. I was okay at like blues scales, but I don't think I enjoyed it that much. But it was fun to hang out with really good musicians who. You know, we're really into jazz and knew a lot of stuff. But
what about on the parallel universe, like with, you know, after school?
Well, me and my best friend were always trying to start a punk band, basically. And you know, we had one band that actually had a drummer and played a show, and it was pretty.
What was that like?
It was at ABC No Rio, which was like the best. Like finding that place was like the best thing that ever happened to me. Just totally opened my life up to an adult world I could deal with. I love that place so much, but it was fun. You know, it was the band.
So that gig was a success.
Yeah, I mean, our friends came and the band was fun. It was like we had some pretty good riffs. Our drummer had asthma and he would just stop in the middle of a song pretty often.
Well, God, he's got to stay alive.
Our singer had like. He was like sort of a role play gamer kind of guy. So he had all these like
what Dungeons and Dragons?
He had like a bunch of homemade weapons and like you know, like anarchist themed like flags, and like he'd like wear a balaclava and stick a sword in the stage, and Yeah.
Whoa.
It was pretty theatrical.
Yeah, a little Dada.
It was really theatrical, which is funny because I most of my music, you know, as an adult has been some way related to theater, you know.
Yeah. Now, were you composing for this unit?
Well, you know, it was just, me and my friend wrote a bunch of, you know, we just wrote riffs together for years and it ended up being a band. It wasn't.
Yeah, but with this guy, you had the balaclava sword man.
That was completely his thing.
Oh,
it was like we played with him for 6 weeks before that show, you know, and then the band broke up. Yeah.
Whoa. it sounds like a Discord band, right? You put out the 7-inch and then you're over.
I wouldn't say we were anywhere near as good as any Discord band.
Do you remember the Youth Brigade, not the California one, but the one they had?
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
They had this song called, talk about Econo. It was called No Song Number Two. And I can give you a cover version right here. No!
I think I remember that.
Sorry to laugh at my own shit. That's stupid.
Like a Napalm Death size.
Yeah, note. But even more Econo. I mean, it was one note and one syllable and right to the point. Right. So, after school, do you pursue like higher education with music?
No. Well, I graduated high school and I was very much in like the kind of squatter anarchist scene, underground scene, like, you know, activist stuff and traveling. So I traveled until I was about 24. I was in Europe for a couple of years and I was out west and I was always just kind of living on somebody's couch or living in a squat or and you know, making money as a street musician. And, you know, my interest.
What were you playing? You were busking, right?
My interest at that time was more folk music. So I played violin. I played mandolin. I played some.
Wow. Now, how'd you learn those? Did you self-taught?
I'm self-taught, yeah. I mean, you know, they translate from guitar, not that hard.
Tuned in fifths.
And, you know, when you're learning stuff like fiddle tunes, it's just like you just play it over and over until it sounds good.
Now, fiddle means it's not on your chin, it's on your arm, right?
I don't know. I feel like there's... I have heard that fiddle is just the English word for violin, so people say violin to sound more continental or whatever, but, you know.
Well, you know, there's a technique, and you were talking bluegrass, where it's on the arm more than under the chin.
Yeah. No, you're right. But
no, I'm not right. I'm just guessing.
A lot of answers to that question, I'm sure. But I played the violin for years and, you know, a lot of other things.
Beautiful, beautiful. Spotsky, you know, the guy recording First Minute Man, he played a viola, but he called it a fedola.
I've never heard of that before.
That's a Spotsky invention.
I am.
Look, we're at the end of the first hour, November 14, 2021 edition, Wat Pedro Show's special remote broadcast from Denver, Colorado. Even more special guest, Reed Hoffman. Hold tight for hour two. November 14, 2021, it's the second hour of the Walk for Pedro Show.
Drunk. frost, syringe in a fist tight O negative being. Said in a rasping whisper.
Walk for Pedro show started it off, that chunk of music, I should say, with the Nothing Factory, an absolute Dean State, or is that a misspelling?
Dream State.
Okay, got to put an R in there. Maybe it was Watt, Pilot Air. Yeah. Wet Cigarette after that, out of Canada, with Queen of Crew. Taff Falco, brand new from him with his Italian guys. Tango Primavera, even though it's fucking almost winter. You know what? Don't know how to fucking pick songs. Juan's, except I love Taff, you know. Juan's Dover, just got to share a stage with him Friday night in Texas. The Cycle of Knot. He wrote a whole album about almost dying in the hospital, in that big journey. And then finally, The Evasive Species, All in the Shades. Reed, tell us about some of these projects, like Nothing Factory.
The Nothing Factory was a musical. What we called it, a epic shadow theater musical. The artist, the visual artist, Eric Ruin, you know, he had moved to Philadelphia, so we were friends, so we put this whole thing together out of a bunch of music I'd been writing and a short story I'd been writing, and we turned it into a piece of theater, with, you know, it was a lot of like shadow puppety kind of things and projections, and there's a narrator and a whole cardboard set, and the band kind of acted a little bit, and it was kind of an allegory
like a musical?
About. It was a musical, yeah. It had like, you know, loud rock songs and really noisy, strange, prepared guitar, incidental music.
You wrote the libretto.
I wrote everything. Yeah. It was like,
it was like a
kind of allegory about, you know, people who have everything and then they don't know what to do with it because it's too much. So they make a nothing factory to turn it all into nothing again. It's pretty weird.
The dirt behind the daydream. I think you're right on the money. I've been trying to write like songs like that forever.
But you can't really get the story out of just one of, like, the songs are very, they accord very specifically to the musical. So, you know, they don't totally make sense as singular things, but, but I like
parts of a whole.
The band, International Anthems for Irrational Numbers was right before that. I had a band that I played like, sort of really atonal, you know, funny tuned guitar, really scrappy, like noisy band. And our drummer was out of town for a few months and we started playing shows, playing kick drums with our feet and like hi-hat with our feet while we like played. And I had kind of taken up. Like
some technique. You got to be a little ambidextrous to do that.
Well, we already had a song where I like played bugle and played guitar at the same time, and then I'd use it as a slide, and I'd, you know, we already had that kind of element where I'm playing two instruments at once like that while I'm singing, and
sure.
So we just turned our former band Greetings from Urbania into International Anthems for Irrational Numbers, which was. Like all of us were playing many instruments at the same time. So
yeah.
I'm finger picking a prepared guitar while I play the trumpet or the bugle. It was the record is cool. Like I like it, but live, it was just like so off the wall. You know, it always sounded really crazy.
Okay. In Invasive Species?
No, that was International Anthem.
I mean, can you lighten us to Invasive Species?
Invasive Species is a band I started with my friends Maddie Katz and Justin Durr and Sophie Francis about 7 years ago, and we had a few bass players come and go. Melissa Santangelo was the most recent. Punk band, I don't know.
I'm thinking of a great bass band. In Philly, Amin Ali, Rashid Ali's son, and he just quit bass altogether.
That's a shame.
it happens. Rimbaud, Arthur Rimbaud, he wrote poems only 2 years, right?
Yeah.
And then some guys like Elvin Jones, he's got the oxygen tanks on the stage. They got to do it till they drop, right?
Yeah.
People are different.
Look,
you gave me this music another proj from Quivers Quantra.
From Quivers Quanta. That's my new project.
Vultures dry their wings on the chimney tops. When the rain has stopped, negative ions drift in the heavy air, charged with yearning breath. Where do you go when you're staring at the wall? Where the weeds grow tall? Where do you go? Where are we?
Watt from Pedro Show. Started that chunk of music out with Thumb Quivers Quantra. Follow a far. See how easy it is for Watt to pronounce if he hears the dude who had the name say it first?
Well, you know, I came up
No, with that's not your fault. That's my fucking fault.
Well, I did come up with some pretty difficult names for you. But
what about those rubber o cement guys? I mean, fuck. Or then all the foreign languages. It's my fault. Please read. I got to own it. Okay. Anyway, Follow a Faraway Feeling, and then the Clang Quartet, Brother Scotty Irvin, with Live at Strange Matter, November 18, 2016. He's got a brand new album out. The Ophelias from Cincinnati, that Spirit Scent. And then finally, The Horrible Department, The Greatest Secret. Enlighten us, Reed.
The Horrible Department was another musical that I wrote with my friend Colin Kasha. It was another like stage musical thing with a narrator and a set. You know, I built a set and it was supposed to be like a person who's mysteriously in a room and all the songs kind of accord to just being stuck in this room listening to this really awful radio announcer. And so, you know, you're just stuck in a room writing songs and it's sort of like what conspiracy theories or cosmology, yeah. What kind of things would you come up in that like Plato's cave kind of scenario?
Right, right. The shadows in the back of the cave.
Yeah. So the lyrics to that whole album are pretty peculiar as well, you know.
You know, I think this is, why is it more theater have the live band thing like what you're doing?
I couldn't tell you. I don't know. I mean, it was a hard balance. Like we had people on both shows. We had people with theater backgrounds, you know, friends of ours who like directed and volunteered a lot of time to help us figure out the dynamics and how to make a thing work aesthetically. I mean, honestly, like I couldn't tell you how well it worked. Like there was a lot of people who complained that it was too loud or that they didn't really follow the story because half of it was like, you know, told through these like surrealist, absurd lyrics. So,
okay, but I think that's good enough for me.
I'd probably go to more theater if there was a weird band playing.
Yeah. Now this new thing, Thumb Quivers, Thumb Quivers, yeah.
That's just me. I'm playing like a 12 string guitar through a bunch of amps, and just kind of telling similar kinds of I don't know, just they're supposed to function as like little short stories, I guess.
But it's still kind of in the same. You use music, kind of, to reach the listeners. It's not just for your own sake.
Well, I mean, I've always I like to make art that's, you know, it reflects back from art that I love, you know?
Yeah.
So it's kind of, you know, passing along the weird creative stuff. I don't know. I mean, I really like to write stories. I really like to write poems and things. So
but you don't like being obvious. You want to be artistic with your expression, right?
I mean, I also don't I was trying, it's funny because I had a period for about the last, I don't know, 8 or 9 years where I was trying to write like a different type of song that's more of a, you know, just like the folkies in the 60s were trying to do, like write political songs that, you know, tell a really specific story to the real world. And yeah. I never felt right singing those kind of songs. So
The Lonesome Ballad of Hattie Carroll.
So I gave
up. No, that's a heavy song. And Emmett Till and Mr. Dillon did a lot of that.
But I never felt comfortable doing that. So I just kind of went back to writing my weird songs.
That's okay. I mean, all of us got to follow our way, but it all come together to make one big choir, I think. Look, we're at the end of the second hour. November 14, 2021 edition of Watt Pedro Show, remote broadcast, Denver, Colorado. Special guest, Reed Hoffman. Hold tight for hour three. November 14, 2021. It's the third hour of the Watt Pedro Show.
Yeah.
making excuses for men anymore. Even if you told me your hands on my neck made you feel in control. Choke me till I come. Choke me till I die. What do I take in my breath? Give you life. Yes.
By the way.
Where were we?
Watch for Pedro show. Started off the third hour with more Thumb Quivers Quantra. Haunted in Our Dreams. Then Bombs Prendon with Burdened by Taste, part one. Hate to hear part two, right? Jerome Byerton and Damon Smith duo doing 3-1 Italian Dogs. Then Jess Joy with Threshold. Some more pun rock, people. I like it. And then, even more Thumb Quivers Quantra, Scatterbones. Bring it, Reed.
What were we saying? I don't know. I like to write from this perspective that's kind of like, it's almost, have you ever read A Canticle for Leibowitz, that sci-fi story? It's kind of like, you know, like,
I am reading some science fiction right now. Izumi Suzuki, Terminal Boredom.
I don't know that.
It just came out. Her stuff was never translated to English until right now.
Yeah, there's a lot of great Chinese sci-fi coming out for sure to the West. But anyway, I like to imagine this, you know, I like to write in this style that's kind of like, you know, like our time period, like what people in the future would try to make sense out of it.
Ah.
You know, it's sort of, things are lost.
Philip J. Dick.
It's kind of surrounded by the mist of time. There's a lot of religious and mythical elements to it. A lot of the abstract ideas get really overblown. And, you know, what people would make, like what people from a, you know, I don't know, a post-apocalyptic time would make of all of our scientific fringe theory and stuff like that. I like to mix things like that up. But I also like to tell, you know, just like one of those songs you played of mine is just like a weird love story about ghosts, you know? I don't know. I like
Look, it's all part of being alive, right? Yeah. I think it's all proper. Look, this other thing, you sent me another horrible department change, right? Now,
yeah.
Was this part of that piece?
The musical was called Capital I and the Royal Waltzing We. And, that was one of the songs.
So was it like there was a narrative through these things?
Yeah, there was a sort of loose narrative and, you know, there were themes, there was an arc to it, but it was very strange. But I would also say,
okay.
You know, I mean, there was, like, to both theater things, there was a didactic element to it. You know, I mean, both things were really influenced by Brecht and people like
that.
Oh,
yeah. Okay.
But it's, you know, it's just told through a very skewed lens, you know.
You know, the first Bertolt Brecht song that I remember hearing was Mac the Doors. No, it was the Doors covering Whiskey Bar. Oh, you don't you wonder why man needs whiskey. Some shit like that. Show me the way to the next whiskey bar. And I thought they wrote it. I had no idea. You know, there was this band in the city called Black Humor, and they had this line, the only thing new is you finding out about it. I take that to heart. But he ended up in California, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, when he was in exile.
Right.
Made some weird... Yeah. Movies, some Hollywood, like Western.
Right. Can you believe? Okay, let's play this change from the horrible department.
Repeating the motions of redundant notions and burning the stir.
But if the things that I observe are only just barely there, and somehow scarcely aware of any reason to care, how can they be so strangely cruel and obtuse? Through the use of walls, rooms, units, and truth, because inside this rotting corpse is a butterfly, too tired to cry.
Watford Pedro Show, last music for this edition. The Horrible Department with Change. And then we had Nadja out of Berlin with Sunborn, and in parentheses, Coda, which is, I think it means tail, but in the opera talk, it means end. And so it's getting near the end of the show, but here's the big piece that's the real Coda. Live at Vox Populi, September 3rd, 2016, Eric's Ruins, Ominous Cloud Ensemble. Enlighten us, Reed.
Well, that's the artist, Eric Ruin, who, you know, both the theater things I was just talking about.
Right.
He was the visual artist. He moved away for a while. And then when he came back to Philly, he put together a thing that's like, it's kind of a loose collective of improvising musicians who play along with, sometimes he'll do these like kind of endless, paper cut scrolls that scroll really slowly. And we improvise a soundtrack to that. And then other times he improvises just like kind of psychedelic visual stuff with his paper cuts and all kinds of projection techniques.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, it's a lot of people who have come and gone and a lot, you know, it's different every time, you know, I don't play.
Can you tell me about this particular piece?
I think that was one of the scrolling, paper cut pieces. So it's a lot more dialed back. Sometimes when we do the full improvised thing, it's like,
yeah,
it's like pretty frantic and pretty, pretty challenging listening.
And what were you working? What instruments?
I play prepared guitar in that band most of the time. So I'm, you know, I have a tin plate I've been using as my guitar thing for, I don't know, 15 years. I bang
tin
on it.
Tin plate? What do you mean tin plate?
I mean, I stick it under the pickups and play it. Or hit it with stuff, okay. Chopsticks. I don't know.
So there's still a guitar involved. I thought you strung up the tin band.
No. That would be cool, but no. I'm just playing weird preparations. So usually when we have a gig, I invent a new tuning and I come up with a few things I'm going to do, you know?
Can I ask you if you drew any inspiration but from Keith Rowe and the AAM?
I don't know what that is.
Okay. It was something in the 60s, and he played a guitar on a table. He wouldn't wear it, you know what I'm saying? And
yeah.
So he would prepare. And he was a big – actually, I didn't know about him until I read Rob Chapman's book on Sid Barrett.
Uh-huh.
And Sid Barrett was really influenced by this cat.
And this
band, too. It was a London improv. I think Derek Bailey came out of this kind of thing.
Oh, wow, yeah.
Okay.
Do you
have a website? Where do people find you on the internet?
I unfortunately have always been kind of not on the internet, but I
okay.
I'm releasing the Thrum Quivers Quanta album on New Year's Day, so I'm gonna make a band camp for that. And The Invasive Species has a band camp. There is a bunch of Ominous Cloud, Eric Ruin's Ominous Cloud Ensemble stuff online, just like on YouTube.
Yeah, with YouTube you get the visual component, right?
Yeah, you can actually see what he's doing. There's one with, there's a couple with the dancer Asimina Kramos, those are pretty cool, but I've never had much of an internet presence myself.
It's okay. I just asked if people wanted to learn more about you. So the next thing you got coming is the Thrum Quivers Quanta album.
Yeah, Thrum Quivers Quanta, yeah.
Quanta, sorry.
Yeah, I just recorded that like a month ago or maybe a little more than that.
How long did it take you to get together? So was it a COVID-19 kind of thing?
I've been writing music for years. I have a lot of stuff. I kind of, after the Horrible Department, I had late term Lyme disease. So like my ability to do a lot of stuff kind of waned. Like, yeah. You know, like back in the day, I was like a full-time college student and writing musicals and working and all at the same time. It kind of changed when I, got sick, but I have,
I think John Lurie has that.
I don't play I don't know if I'll play live, for instance. I don't know if I'm up to that, but I'm just excited to make some new records.
Absolutely.
I have a lot of music.
Well, I consider music kind of a lifeline. When things get fucked up, you know, you hold on.
But I did, to answer your question, I did find a lot more just like, you know, I wasn't able to get together with my friends and do my music projects that I've been doing the last while. So I did start, you know, I got a practice space and I did start playing a lot more electric guitar and just like figuring new stuff out. So I guess you're right. It is kind of a COVID thing, but before COVID, I used to pretty frantically write stuff all the time anyway.
Yeah. Well, look,
I just haven't gotten to releasing any of my own music in a really long time.
Except you're going to start doing that, right? And
yeah.
When you do, would you please flow it to me so I could play it on the show? And maybe you can come back on. Invites open. You can talk about all your stuff.
I'd love to do that.
Thank you so much, Reed. Big honor to have you aboard, truly.
Thank you, yeah.
People, it's been the November 14, 2021 edition of Walk Pedro Show. Keep your powder dry.